This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. This exciting collection of truly unique, limited edition diamond engagement rings is available now only at BlueDiamond.com.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. David Locke along with Ben Golliver running you through all of last night's action. We'll look a little bit ahead to the big Denver Lakers game. It was an interesting night, Ben. There are 10 games. There really wasn't like a marquee game on the schedule, and yet I would say there was a little bit of an interesting kind of takeaways throughout the night. There's just a lot of little storylines on an interesting night of NBA basketball.
For sure, and some unpredictable results or unexpected results. You saw everything from, you know, big blowouts. I would think that Milwaukee-Indiana game jumped off the schedule to me. You know, kind of a litmus test game for the Pacers. They started off the season pretty well. Miles Turner is getting his Defensive Player of the Year buzz. They just go right in, you know, to a buzzsaw with the Milwaukee Bucks. You saw the Minnesota Timberwolves looking like they were going to get a much-needed victory, and they kind of snatch a defeat from the jaws of victory, whatever that phrase would be. So, blowing it down the stretch against San Antonio, and then all sorts of stuff in between. So I don't know where you want to start, but we've got all sorts of stuff to dig into.
Let's start with the headliners, because I think one of the storylines tonight was that some of the best teams in the NBA played and showed it. So the Clippers blow out Cleveland 121-99. Cleveland only took 10 threes in the entire game. Paul George took 9 all by himself, and the Clippers hit 20 of 34 from three. So they rolled. Paul George had 36 in that game. Let's get a little quick take on that one from our LA Clippers host on Locked On Now before we break that one down.
What's going on, Clipper fans? It is me, Positive Chuck Mockler, one half of the hosting duo over at Locked On Clippers. The Clippers just dispatched the Cavs 121-99 to end their East Coast road trip at 4-2, a very, very good record over that span, especially without Patrick Beverley. Paul George continues to be maybe the most disrespected MVP candidate with 36, 4, and 6 tonight. Kawhi Leonard added 24 points. It was a great way to end this trip. No Patrick Beverley. We got to see Zubats find his footing a little bit. And Lou Will might be hitting that stride that a lot of Clippers fans want him to hit. What's going to happen against the Celtics? We're not really sure. But right now, we can be excited that the Clippers are looking strong.
Are we taking Paul George as a disrespected MVP candidate, Ben Golliver?
Well, he's certainly pitching himself that way. I'm sure you saw his comments after the loss to the Brooklyn Nets, where he was upset with the officials that he wasn't getting the foul calls. I think that's somewhere between the 200th and 250th time he's complained about the officiating over the course of his career. It's a regular gripe for Paul George. And I'll say this, if you're going to, you know, raise the issue and have everybody say, oh, you're not being treated fairly and all that, a pretty good thing to do is come out the next night, have 36 points, and play quite well. To me, he's in the top five for MVP candidates. I actually had him slightly above Kawhi Leonard, although you can make a strong case for both of those guys. The Clippers have been playing very well. I would, you know, just tend to focus on that Brooklyn Nets game because it was kind of a showdown, and the Nets sort of made a lot out of the idea that they looked at it as a measuring stick game. A couple things that jumped out to me. I mean, look, the Clippers have got to get more stuff going towards the basket, more stuff from the free throw line, including from Paul George. He wants to blame the officials. I think some of that just falls on his shoulders. It's got to be, you know, more than just the outside three-point shooting weapon from him in these big-time matchups. You could see Kyrie Irving attacking the basket relentlessly late in the game. You know, James Harden, Kevin Durant creating good shots. I want to see Paul George do a little bit more punching back in those situations. And I just didn't really see it. The other flaw that I saw from the Clippers, and I'm wondering your thoughts on this. I mean, the point of attack defense, especially when it comes to quicker point guards, it was an issue in the last year's playoffs. I mean, Jamal Murray just absolutely torched them. Now, Luka Doncic is a bigger, a little bit slower, you know, point of attack guy, but they really struggled to defend him in the first round of the playoffs too. He was carving them up and putting up 40 plus. And then you look at that head-to-head matchup with Brooklyn. I mean, Kyrie Irving down the stretch is getting absolutely anywhere he wanted, cutting through their defense. And even earlier this week, they decided to switch Kawhi Leonard over to guard Emmanuel Quigley, that the rookie point guard for the Knicks, because they just needed to stop the bleeding at that position. I think the Clippers would say, well, we just got to get Patrick Beverley back and everything's going to be okay there. I'm not totally convinced. I mean, to me, this looks like a relatively serious flaw for them in terms of their overall defensive scheme. I think they're going to be vulnerable to guys who are capable of doing that, even potentially in playoff matchups. What do you think?
So I love the Clips. I think they're absolutely fabulous. But you bring up a really interesting point, and three of them in there that I'll touch on that all are kind of backed up by things that I had seen numbers-wise, but that I hadn't really tried to figure or hadn't figured out yet. Like, so let's start with their defense. They're 16th in the league defensively. They're the best offensive team in the NBA, but the Clips are 16th in the league defensively. That feels pretty low for a team that has Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So why is that? Like, what's going on there? You're talking about point of attack. Patrick Beverley, you're right. You start saying, well, he's going to come back. Everything's all right. This is a guy who played 50 games last year. He played 78 the year before, but only started 49. He played 11 the year before that. He's 32 years old and tiny. Like, I get he's a pit bull, but at 6'1", 180, at 32 years old, that begins to be on the wrong side of the aging curve. And then the last one you point out that, again, makes no real sense if you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. They're 27th in the league in shots at the rim. So I am, like, the biggest boaster in the world on the Clippers. I think they're the best team in the NBA. And I think, like, if I had to make a Western Conference pick right now, I'm taking the Clippers. But you bring up really, really good points. I just am overwhelmed by their length and their scoring prowess and the sense that they could put out a lineup of Nicholas Batum, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Marcus Morris Sr., and Serge Ibaka, and then defend at 6'8 or more at every position, and then have the number one offense in the league. I just feel like that's unstoppable. But you bring up really, really good points that I didn't have an answer to before you brought them up.
Well, I would say this. Look, I'm just trying to nitpick because they're really good, you know, and like they don't have a lot of flaws. So they're at the stage right now of their life cycle where it's like, okay, you know, Kawhi Leonard's healthy. You know, you're not nitpicking his body. You're not worried about load management. He's been out there. He's been consistent. He's been in that MVP conversation. Paul George has put last year well in the past. He has had a very strong shooting start, but also just in general impact start. And then their overall offensive approach, you know, in terms of unselfish ball movement, turning good shots into great shots and just continuing to move the ball around and having lots of shooting threats on the court at all times. Those are not necessarily things that you can really find a lot of flaws in. So their list of shortcomings to me is relatively short. But I do worry that those kinds of things are exactly the type of thing that cost them in last year's playoffs. And it could come back to bite them as we look forward. You know, I kind of see a cut though right now with the Lakers and the Clippers. I feel like they're, you know, I don't want to discount your Utah Jazz or even the Denver Nuggets, who I think have just been playing awesome basketball, winning, I think, six of their last seven. But I do still feel like those are kind of the two reign supreme type teams in the Western Conference. Are you on that same page?
Well, Jazz fans would like to mention to you that the Jazz and Clippers have played this year and the Jazz led by 20.
The Jazz have led by 20 against basically everyone, haven't they? I mean, I guess they got down to down by 20 to Denver the other night too. But yeah, man, they're really good. That's why I said I don't want to discount them necessarily. But if we're looking at playoff matchups and stylistic versatility and superstar potential and all that, I would still say it's Lakers and Clippers. But you know, we could also nitpick the Lakers flaws too. I don't think that they're a perfect team either, and they've looked more vulnerable here, I would say, over the last 2 weeks than they did prior to that when they really came out of the gate strong.
I've said I think they're the four best teams in the NBA, or the four teams you're talking about. Utah, L.A., Lakers, and Denver. Jokic is the MVP to me, and he's been so great. I think the Clippers and Lakers are great. And then, you know, really, I just find it – I know I'm their radio voice, so you can take this however you want to take it. But I think there's like – the Jazz are doing some interesting things. They're the only team in the NBA that's in the top five in offense and defense. They're the first team in NBA history to hit 15 threes in 11 straight games. They're shooting over 40% of their shots as threes and making over 40%. No one's ever come close to doing that. Like, there's some things they're doing that are just different than anyone's ever done in the NBA before. And – you know, you wonder a little bit on those kind of, like, are they onto something? So that's why and they have the best differential of anyone in the NBA by over 2 points. So I think when you look at all those things, and we're 21 games into a 72 game season, it's a pretty good sample size. I'll keep Utah on that, but it might be just because I'm their radio voice.
Well, hey, let me ask you a question on this, because I've been on like this Nikola Jokic promo tour for the last week. I've been trying to hype him up. I did pick him as my first quarter MVP, and I've been just trying to get everybody to realize he's made a step forward from even last year or the year before. He's a different player. Like, he has absolutely improved his overall offensive impact. The numbers show it. The eye test shows it. And just how well he carried them through some early season struggles showed it too. What did you see during that 47-point game? And I'm sure you called that game. We haven't talked together since then. What popped out about Jokic in that particular game for
you? So there was a lot of things. One was that when Derek Favors got on him instead of Rudy Gobert, he just shot the three over him with ease. And it was like, if you're not 7'2 guarding him, you can't deny his shooting window from the outside. What he used to do against Gobert is be somewhat reluctant to go to the basket against him. On two different occasions, he put the ball on the floor from 19 to 20 feet out, isolated on the right wing, and worked himself to the left side of the basket and scored. Once with his patented footwork, once on a reverse layup. Frankly, both of them were tough enough shots. If I was the Jazz, I would have been fine with it. But the fact that he made both of them, so now you suddenly have him with his patented footwork, his conducting and his passing. The Jazz took away his passing, and he's now so versatile offensively, and skinny Jokic, which was the story last year in the bubble, is actually making a difference. I've never seen him put the ball on the floor. I'm sure Adam Mattis of Locked On Nuggets and Matt Moore of Locked On Nuggets have, but against Gobert, I'd never seen him put the ball on the floor from 19 feet out and drive aggressively and be able to get to the basket on him.
Oh, for sure. I think he's doing that more this season than I've ever seen before. He's one of those guys where you almost think, hey, is he a little bit too unselfish? I think that was almost a knock on him. Even going back to last season, you could still say, like, wow, he definitely looks for the shot a lot. His teammates are kind of inconsistent in quality, and he's still willing to trust them in some, you know, key moments in terms of, all right, we're going to, you know, just keep the ball moving and have somebody take a corner three rather than him going and attacking like a one-on-one type situation. But now if he feels like he's in this favorable matchup, or if he is getting himself into a situation where the ball, you know, kicks out to him, it's a little bit of a scramble for the defense, and now he can find a little seam to exploit with the dribble. He's doing it, and he makes incredible decisions with his pass, but he's also very improvisational when he's going towards the basket. I think on some of those drives, like, he doesn't even know what he's going to do. He's making it up as he goes along, and he's so big, he's so talented, and he's long, and he's got such soft touch. He can make good things happen in those kinds of situations. Sometimes guys get going downhill and you're like, oh God, how is this going to end? Probably a player control foul or some sort of a wild layup or something like that. And it's just really not the case with him. I was so impressed by that game. I love that you guys, you know, kept fighting. The Jazz did in the second half. I mean, they didn't want to roll over. So I like to see that just, you know, from a competitive standpoint. But I felt like individually that was the best performance I'd seen from any player so far this season from Jokic.
Yeah, I would agree. He also, they were the first team ever in NBA history to make 8 threes in a quarter without a miss. They made 15 threes in the first half. They only took 17 attempts. Nobody had ever made 15 threes and a half in fewer than 22 attempts. The interesting one from a Utah perspective, by the way, if we're going to continue this discussion, who the best teams are, is that's what it took to end the Jazz streak. Was it Jokic 47 in historic three-point shooting? Like, that game in some ways to me may actually validate how good Utah is, because if that's what it takes to beat them, that actually is the unnerving thing. We'll see. Lakers-Denver tonight will be a great one, probably one of the first really great marquee games of the year. Milwaukee beat Indiana tonight. That one's interesting because I think we've all been waiting for Milwaukee to click in. Was this their click-in game? And then I think we're kind of wondering a little bit about Indiana, who's now 12-10. We'll touch on that in a second. You know who this show is brought to you by? Come on, you know, it's Rock Auto. That's right, because Thursdays with Locke and Golliver, the two guys in the world who probably know the least about how to do anything to their cars you could possibly imagine, are doing a show together. And so we end up talking about, like, windshield wipers, because that's about my realm of it. All right, maybe I could do something else. I don't know. I'll put on chains if I have to. It's at rockauto.com. But the great thing about Rock Auto is if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you get the same price as the pro. You get a cheaper price than the chain stores. You get great selection on multiple different brands for your products, because you're not restricted to buy what the chain store has for you. For example, a fuel pump assembly at Advanced Auto Parts is stunningly $354 compared to the $217 at Rock Auto. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. Locked On Today is your daily podcast on all the 20 minutes rundown of the world of sports, the biggest stories, all the things you need to know to be locked on. It's Locked On Today. Go subscribe on iTunes or follow on Spotify. Locked On Today. Milwaukee beats Indiana. I think we're all kind of waiting for Milwaukee to click in. Are you? To me, they haven't looked right, but I don't know what that really means. I mean, they're 13-8. I guess it means they've lost 8 games. I don't love the fact that Giannis is not a final 5 minutes of a game player, but they didn't have to deal with it again tonight because they won by 20. And is this a bigger win? This is the cliche question, but I do think it's relevant. Is this a bigger win for Milwaukee that they blew out a contender by 20, or is it a sign that Indiana's not a contender?
I would say probably more so the latter, but I do think it was a big win for Milwaukee. They've been struggling to kind of get their chemistry going on offense. Now, the numbers would say, hey, they've been off the charts from an efficiency standpoint, and I think some of that has been boosted by their performance in, you know, blowout wins like this or some of their games against, lesser defenses where they've just been able to just kind of, you know, storm through the gates and Giannis goes crazy and then it's just game over. But they've had some moments where it's really been up and down. If their shooting isn't there, Giannis is pressing. They've got some spacing issues around the basket this season as they've adjusted their offensive scheme that maybe didn't quite exist as much during last year's regular season but did pop up during the playoffs. So it's kind of a feel-out period, and they changed an awful lot of their roster, so I kind of expected this. I mean, their bench is practically completely overhauled, they did change multiple starters as well. So I've been giving Milwaukee kind of a loose leash so far, and I think that they're going to feel very good about this victory, especially because, you know, Indiana did, you know, start out of the gate very strong. But you look at the Pacers even since that Victor Oladipo trade, and it's a little bit tricky because they haven't had Caris LeVert right coming back. That was the piece they were counting on to kind of plug in, but they really have seen their momentum and their record come back to earth a little bit. And they've really, you know, banking a lot of these things on defense. It's just the incredible impact that Miles Turner has been having so far this season. I mean, he was blocking as many shots as any player since Alonzo Mourning per game in 1999. I mean, that's not an easy stat to come across in today's NBA. It's a very different stylistic game than it was, you know, back in Alonzo Mourning's day. And yet here they really had no answers from Milwaukee. So I don't know if that's some sort of a crisis moment for the Pacers. I think they're probably still feeling good about themselves because they didn't exactly come into the season with major expectations of making a deep playoff run. But I definitely got my hopes way up for them, and they're starting to cool off a little bit. It does sort of feel like they're coming back to earth and they're settling into that normal range. You know, that's, you know, 4-8 seed range where they typically land.
They're 4-6 in their last 10. The one that just jumps out to me tonight, as good as Miles Turner's been, he plays 23 minutes. Sabonis plays 31. Sabonis 33-12-6.
Monster.
If they have to choose guys, as good as Miles Turner's been this year, they're choosing Sabonis, right? Do we still think that the two can exist together, or is Miles Turner a possible trade guy? And then I got to tell you, if he's a possible trade person out there, to me, there's more rosters where he changes the landscape than maybe even Bradley Beal, right? Like, I think about Denver. They go add Bradley Beal, they have to, like, change a – they're giving away a lot, and it's a big hit, and they're pretty good with that. Like, Miles Turner, like, somehow gets on New Orleans, or Miles Turner gets to Boston – they had the chance to get him and they didn't do it. I think Miles Turner could have as big an impact as anyone in this race. You know, I don't know. I mean, more than Bradley Beal is a hard call to say, but it does feel that way to me a little bit.
No, I definitely hear what you're saying. I mean, it's also probably a massive price difference, right? So, like, if you're trading for a Bradley Beal, you're paying a premium. Now, it's not a James Harden premium, but it's a big premium. And there were some conversations, like, you know, between Boston and Indiana where you didn't really feel like Boston was even trying to give up that much to get him. And so I think from Indiana's standpoint, it's a good situation to be in because there's absolutely no doubt his trade value has increased here over the last couple of months, right? And you were starting to question his contract, I think, even coming into the season, like, oh, is he making too much? Is he worth it? And I think right now you look at, you know, the value they're getting out of him, you're feeling great about it, and you would, if you did want to trade for him, you'd be happy that he's under contract for two more years after this, right? So and he's making $18 million a year this year, and that's exactly the kind of player where if you're not coexisting with your fellow stars in Indiana very well, that number can jump off the page and be ugly. But if things are rolling like they have been at times this season, then you know, you're totally happy with that number. I think in terms of a fit with Sabonis, they've been very creative in how they've deployed him offensively. And I do think that their overall team would really suffer if they didn't have Miles Turner kind of holding down the defense. And it's a situation where like Sabonis has been allowed to be his best self and really focus what he does, you know, on what he does well by having Turner to handle a lot of the other stuff defensively. If you took Turner off, I would worry, how do you fill that spot and still complement Sabonis on the defensive end? That would make me just a little bit nervous. So I guess if I was the Pacers, I wouldn't necessarily rush into a trade. But I would also be interested in doing like an auction, right? Like seeing how many of these teams that do have a need at center who are looking at like a Joel Embiid in the playoffs and saying, hey, we've got to find somebody who can kind of push back on him to some degree better than our current personnel, or even a Bam Adebayo in Miami if they can kind of turn their season around, right? You know, some of these teams out there are going to be shopping for an impact center, and he's one of the few that you could say out there would actually be potentially available.
It's an interesting mix. Philadelphia beat Charlotte tonight, 118-111. Are you all in? Are you? Let's go Cold Stone. Do you like it, love it, or gotta have it with Philadelphia?
I like it. You know, they've been, you know, backing up some of their talk recently about feeling like they should have three all-stars and feeling like people haven't really given them their credit. So I guess I tip my hat to them. I still wonder like, okay, you know, Eastern Conference Finals and your big three is Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Tobias Harris. And Brooklyn's big three is Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant. I got to say, I'm taking Brooklyn's pretty quickly. I'm not, you know, I understand that there's going to be other pieces around there. Brooklyn has to show that it can defend and all that kind of stuff. But I'm still skeptical of what kind of an impact Simmons and Tobias Harris can make in a postseason format. And I also just think that, you know, from a positional matchup standpoint, they're going to struggle to handle Brooklyn superstar level guys. I think Brooklyn sets the terms of that series from a style standpoint, as opposed to Philadelphia. So look, if they're the second or third best team in the Eastern Conference, that's no slouch whatsoever. But I don't love them enough to be like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to take them because Embiid's an MVP favorite or candidate and, you know, they're going to win the conference. I'm not quite there yet.
I'm all in on Brooklyn. They'll figure it out. They'll defend when they have to. They're so good. It's just ridiculous. Like the other night, what those three guys do? They scored like 90 points on 50 shots. You got no chance.
Oh, yeah, and they cranked up their defensive intensity, I thought, in the late game, too. My favorite part about that game against the Clippers was that Steve Nash got a little bit more assertive in the late game. You know, I've been kind of hard on him this season for just sitting back and letting some of these wins turn into losses just out of almost not indifference, but just, you know, just hands-off approach. And you saw him fouling up three pretty aggressively in that situation. You saw him taking his time out, setting up inbounds plays so the right guy could get the free throws. And you also saw them, you know, hit that home run pass to Jeff Green and kind of catch the Clippers off guard. I thought they actually executed quite well in that late game situation. That's been one of their biggest bugaboos to me all season long, even dating back before the James Harden trade. And, you know, it was good to see, you know, you chalk that one up in the win column for Steve Nash. You say, okay, you're not a liability in that game like maybe he has been at other points this season.
All right, let's check in on a few other games. Gavin Schall has the New York Knicks reaction to the win over the Bulls.
Kevin Schall of Locked On Knicks here with you. A 107-103 victory over the Chicago Bulls. And my biggest takeaway from this one was the continued all-star level play from Julius Randle. 27 points, 6 boards, 6 assists. The most important statistic to me, though, 5 of 7 from behind the arc. Last season, Randle was under 30% from distance on the season. This year now, all the way up to 37% from behind the arc, along with 47% from the field and 81% from the foul line. The difficulty for Randle is turned up to a 10 out of 10 essentially every game, being forced to play with Elfrid Payton, RJ Barrett, who's inconsistent shooting the ball, Mitchell Robinson, who's constantly parked in the dunking spot. He has zero room to operate. He's been getting double teamed and even triple teamed now, night after night, just continues to hit tough shots, hit big shots for the New York Knicks. and averaging 22 points, 11 boards, 6 assists per game. While I would argue playing career best defense and keeping his turnovers down, he's certainly deserving to be in the mix to be on the Eastern Conference All-Star team this year. Over and out, Gavin Shaw, Locked On Knicks.
Wow, a big claim for Locked On Knicks get All-Star appearance. You never know. By the way, the new show is Locked On Bets. It's brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline.ag will get you into the action with all sorts of Super Bowl prop bets if you want to jump in on that. Plus, you can get the NBA, college games going on. With the promo code LOCKEDON, you get a 50% welcome bonus. That's free money. That's right, 50% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. LOCKEDON is your promo code to get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag. for you with your Locked On promo for 50% welcome bonus. Also, today's show is brought to you by CBDMD. CBDPM blends 500 milligrams of high-quality CBD with melatonin and other sleep-promoting ingredients to create a powerful, effective sleep aid. We're all working hard. You don't want to lose your sleep, so let's see what else you can get. CBD bath salts. Fuse superior CBD with Epsom, Dead Sea, and Himalayan salts to turn your bath into a luxury experience available in lavender and eucalyptus scents, as well as soothing nighttime blend with melatonin and calming herbs. CBD MD is helping you relax and shed a little stress and get you better night's sleep. And this will shed some stress too. With the promo code NBA, you get 25% off your next order. So make it easier as the year gets started to get off on the right foot with CBD MD and your promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBD MD. The most bizarre game of the night was the Minnesota Timberwolves kicking another one away. I don't know if our Lockdown Wolves host is going to be okay. Ben, he might need some CBD MD. Let's see how he's doing.
Ben Beacon with Locked On Wolves here. The Timberwolves lost again, this time to the San Antonio Spurs by 3 points. In a game that they led by as many as 16 early in the fourth quarter, the Spurs went on a 20-2 fourth quarter run. D'Angelo Russell used 6 of the Wolves' 7 possessions over a 5-minute span in the fourth quarter without passing the ball one time. And fittingly, the game ended on a D'Angelo Russell miss in isolation, a contested 3-pointer that would have tied the game with just a few seconds left. The Wolves' offense on the stretch was putrid, and there's a lot of questions to be answered about what it's going to look like when Karl-Anthony Towns returns, who's going to have the ball down the stretch, who's going to have the ball with the game on the line. Going to talk about that and a lot more at Locked On Wolves for Thursday's show, post-game podcast coming this evening. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Wolves for all things Timberwolves.
Putrid and D'Angelo Russell not passing. Maybe we should just give credit to the Spurs, but boy, Minnesota's really scuffling.
No, and I think shout out to the podcaster there. I mean, that's a tough night to come on the air afterwards. And so, you know, give him credit for facing the microphones. Log. I mean, that's a hard one to take. I understand his frustration about Russell. It just feels like Karl-Anthony Towns has been out for an awful long time. I think from Minnesota standpoint, I just hope that he can kind of get back into the swing of things as quickly as possible, because that's just not a winning formula. You know, D'Angelo Russell, late game takeovers, night after night, you know, trying to do it with his shot and trying to do it, you know, operating on high screen and roll or whatever else. I mean, I just don't think you're going to win a lot of games trying to play that way. I've always been on the more skeptical side of things when it comes to analyzing, you know, him as a player. And I think that, you know, consistency aspect just really has not been there even since the trade. So I think their solution is Karl-Anthony Towns returning the lineup if they're going to salvage the season in any manner. That's where it's going to have to start. Until then, I just best wishes to the Locked On Wolves podcaster there, because this has been a tough season.
The Rockets have been on a win streak. It came to an end tonight. The Thunder surprised, and this was the surprise of the night. Let's check in here from both Jackson Gatlin and Rylan Styles. Let's start with Locked On Rockets, who are on the losing end of this one.
What's up, Jackson Gatlin from Locked On Rockets. Man, Rockets losing in an ugly way to the Oklahoma City Thunder, 104-87, in a game where just they could get nothing to go their way. You know, shot miserably from behind the arc. shot terribly overall, under 40% for the game. Offense looking really lost without John Wall, but you tip your cap to the Thunder, who packed the paint defensively, made the Rockets, you know, shoot from outside. Defensively, there was miscommunications all over the place, you know, probably the worst that they've looked defensively in a while since the win streak started. Really missing John Wall in this game, you know, both on both sides of the floor. His leadership, you know, he means a lot to this team, and he's been the leader since James Harden was traded. So for a full breakdown on what went wrong in this game and how the Rockets can improve moving forward, be sure to check out Locked On Rockets, your team every single day.
All right, that's Jackson Gatlin. Let's find out what the Thunder had to say about that one.
I am Ryland Stiles, host of the Locked On Thunder podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. The Oklahoma City Thunder just got done beating the Houston Rockets by 17 points. The Rockets came into this contest as one of the hottest teams in the NBA, including a beatdown of Oklahoma City on Monday. The Thunder were without SGA and did not have George Hill either. And then midway through the first quarter in this contest, they lost Lou Dort, leaving them with 9 available players the rest of the way, and they still won by 17 points. A lot of that was due to Kenrich Williams, who had a phenomenal game off the bench, scoring 19 points and getting it done for Oklahoma City. This was also a masterclass in coaching by Thunder head coach Mark Degnott. For more on this game, listen to Locked On Thunder anywhere you get your podcast from.
What's your take on Houston and how good you think they are, Ben?
Well, they're not very good if they're losing by almost 20 points to a team where Dort doesn't score a single point and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't play. No, look, I think that they were still enjoying there for a while the post, you know, James Harden trade energy bump across the board. I mean, they were winning games by just outworking everybody, having, you know, the best defense in the league there for a couple weeks straight and just, you know, kind of grinding them out. I think when I'm stepping back in big picture and taking a longer term approach, you know, if your core is John Wall, Victor Oladipo, and Christian Wood, I don't really have a lot of faith in that core to win a lot of games in the Western Conference. And part of that is because there is going to be this injury risk slash, you know, a minutes management aspect of the John Wall experience. I think part of that is Oladipo's in a contract year, and, you know, paying him this summer would make me a little bit nervous. I feel like the perception of his value has really changed a lot over the course of the last year, in part because of injuries, in part because of, you know, his talk about wanting to maybe go to certain markets or whatever else, and in part because of this trade, which really nobody saw coming. I would be very hesitant to be the team that pays Oladipo this summer. And I think if they locked in with that as their kind of core trio, I'm not sure where that's really getting them. And it's kind of one of those situations where they're probably in between a full rebuild and actually being a team that can, you know, make the playoffs and have fun. And you don't really want to get stuck in that particular zone of the standings. So, you know, to me, I think they've outperformed my expectations following the trade because they didn't fall off a cliff. And I was worried that could happen. But I'm still generally skeptical of their overall direction. I think it's going to take them a couple years to sort this thing out.
Mavs win! Mavs win! Mavs win! First win in like 6 games. Nick Angstead is awfully excited.
Nick Angstead from the Locked On Mavericks podcast here after the Dallas Mavericks finally break their 6-game losing streak. It was just a terrible, terrible stretch there for the Dallas Mavericks, but they get the win. Luka Doncic leads them. Kristaps Porzingis finally breaks out of his slump and just has probably the best game of his season so far. He gets a technical foul late in the game, and that just fired him up. He even went on a crazy run himself. He was cutting. He was diving at the rim. He was doing all kinds of things that you want to see Kristaps Porzingis doing. Hopefully, this wakens him up for the rest of the season. He also, though, was taken out late in the game, about a couple minutes left in the game. Mavericks were up, but the Hawks were coming back, and he threw something on the bench, and he was upset and frustrated. He said after the game he was frustrated that he wants more minutes, wants longer stretches of time, doesn't like Carlisle taking him out so frequently. And so there's a lot of things to figure out, but the Dallas Mavericks finally get a win. And we'll have more on the Locked On Mavericks podcast.
Porzingis has just not been good this year. I mean, like, we don't need to beat around the bush on that one. When he played the Jazz, he was terrible. And so for him to be getting upset about things seems a little surprising, because it seems like Dallas should be upset with him.
For sure. I mean, was he struggling to move in that game as well? Like, defensively,
Couldn't move at all. They just went and got him out on the open court and went at him every play.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I've been seeing these last couple of games I've watched. This is not the first time he's complained about the minutes or about, like, kind of how they're using him. He had a similar issue during that losing streak as well. I think it's a case where he's coming back. He's playing poorly. If I was in his situation, I would probably be in my head about it because he got a late start to the season because of the injury, and because I think he's got to realize that he's not playing well and that teams are kind of picking on him. And I think usually in those situations, you have a choice. You either believe in yourself and ask for more, or you kind of shrink away. And shrinking has never really been Porzingis' personality. The guy is, confident, borderline cocky. I mean, you remember, he got the ejection during the playoffs and kind of trash-talking against the Clippers and all that. I mean, he kind of lives for the moment, lives for the conflict a little bit. And I do believe he has the kind of confidence in himself to think that he's a star-level guy, but he just hasn't been playing like it. I think that his slow start has been a contributing factor to Dallas's struggles. And just like Nick said in that clip, if they're going to turn this thing around, if they're going to get themselves back into the playoff picture and try to maintain some positive momentum, Porzingis is going to have to be a key driver of that. And hopefully he can get himself back into better conditioning and also just better health and kind of maintain it for that to happen. But this team needed a win in the worst way. I mean, it was a 6-game losing streak. Luka was frustrated, calling out his team's effort. I don't know if you watch any of these YouTube press conferences post-game, but, I mean, Carlisle looked just beyond wit's end. I mean, he was just so frustrated and down after some of these recent losses, including that last-second loss to Phoenix earlier this week. This is a team that just really, really, really needed a win, and they got one tonight.
Few other ones to catch up on tonight before we wrap up with Ben. Surprise, New Orleans blasts the Phoenix Suns tonight, 123-101, Zion 28-7-6. Good balance across the board. They had double figures from all five starters, whereas Chris Paul and Devin Booker had 25. Chris Paul had just 10 today. Chris Paul played 25 minutes. Chris Paul's played a lot of minutes. They've played a lot of games, and they've played a lot of overtime. That very well could be a tired team. Washington beat Miami in Miami. Butler played. Adebayo played. Duncan Robinson played. Tyler Hero played. Goran Dragic played. Andre Iguodala played. Avery Bradley played. They still lost. Worried about Miami yet?
I treat them in the same category as Dallas. I think other than Washington, who basically had their season shut down, both Miami and Dallas have had more, COVID-related absences and lineup changes than almost any other team. I kind of look at this for Washington. I mean, they need every win they can get. I mean, they should cherish this one. It actually came without Russell Westbrook, which I think is an important learning lesson for them. He's been in and out of the lineups this year. They're trying to manage his body. And he's actually been a fairly damaging presence when he does play. They're not always great with him on the court. So I think if you're Scott Brooks, your message to the other guys, the kind of lesser known supporting cast members for Bradley Beal is like, look, guys, this is an important win for us. You guys showed you could do it without Westbrook, and we should have a level of confidence in our offense and our ability to score the basketball, even if we don't have our star out there on the court. I think, for some of these younger players, whether it's a Rui Hachimura, a Denny Avdija, who are still kind of finding their way in the league, and they were able to contribute tonight against Miami, I think it could be a confidence booster, but it's also just kind of a big picture, like, hey, don't just immediately quit if we don't have Westbrook, because he's going to miss some time this year. Let's make sure we stay focused and go out there and try to steal some wins.
I'm sorry, when did you get elected, and when are you, like, politely politicking for, like, a committee position? what was your phrase? What was your phrasing on that? They're not like let's get the facts out. When Russell Westbrook's on the floor, they're -8. They're in the 17th percentile. Their offense is in the 33rd percentile. Their defense is in the 18th percentile. When Russell Westbrook doesn't play and is off the floor, like let's quit the BS about this. When Russell Westbrook is off the floor, they're even. Their offense is in the 81st percentile. Their defense is still not good. It's in the 14th percentile. He's detrimental. He is a negative impact on your basketball team. He does not make you better anymore. Like, let's stop. Like, why does everybody have such a hard time admitting this?
I pride myself on keeping it real, and I'm going to tip my hat. You kept it realer, but I co-sign everything you just said. It's been a really rough experience for him. Injury issues are also factoring in. Clearly, he's made that pretty obvious. But also, when he has been on the court and he has said that he's healthy, the contributions are inconsistent at best. Let's put it that way.
Last year, the Houston Rockets, when he's on the floor, like, we're better when he's off the floor too. Like, how many years in a row do we need this to happen?
No, and how many years in a row have teammates played better when he hasn't been there? Or, like, you know, the situation has been more functional when he's not there. And that goes back to my message from Scott Brooks is, like, you know, tell these guys, you know, this is – I understand that Westbrook is very famous relative to a lot of the other Wizards players, and I understand that he gets an awful lot of attention and he might get the triple-double numbers and, you know, the media is going to talk about him. But they need to be viewing themselves as very crucial parts of this team. One, because you can never really know, is Westbrook going to be able to stay healthy kind of going forward? And so you've got to be prepared for those kinds of situations. But as you've mentioned, you know, it's very possible as the season unfolds that Westbrook is going to see his time limited, whether because he's resting or just because it's in the team's best interest to play him in shorter bursts or, you know, just use him a little bit more delicately. The biggest problem that I see when Westbrook plays is that a lot of time he's just cutting into the usage of a player like a Bradley Beal, right? And you see without Westbrook tonight, Beal gets 23 shots, 8 free throw attempts, and 11 threes. That sounds awesome. I would like that. And it, you know, pans out with 32 points, which for Beal is almost an off night at this point because he's been scoring the basketball so well. So the more possessions they can save for Bradley Beal and save for, you know, quality ball movement and keep it away from Westbrook pounding and pulling up from mid-range and pulling up from three and missing, the better.
Final word of the night was a stunner. It was Sacramento who decided to stop playing Marvin Bagley, and they got better when they did that. It's funny how this works. Like, if you have guys that are negative plus minus that are really detrimental on either one side or the other of the floor, if you stop playing them as much, your team gets way better. It's a stunning thing. But Sacramento, by the way, wins tonight 116-111. Let's hear from John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, and Matt George, Locked On Kings, about this one.
Hey there, John Corrales here from Locked On Celtics. The Celtics lose in Sacramento by 5 on the back-to-back. Yeah, they were shorthanded. No Kemba, no Marcus Smart, no Peyton Pritchard. But they had opportunities to win this game, and really it boils down to fouling. They put the Kings in the penalty with almost 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They gave Sacramento a ton of free points. And then De'Aaron Fox gets going. Tyrese Halliburton gets going. The Celtics are not able to secure key defensive rebounds. They're not able to get stops. But those fouls, those dumb fouls really by the Celtics and giving the Sacramento Kings free points just took away any chance the Celtics had at winning this game. They had it. It was right there for them. And they just couldn't finish. And the dumb fouls were really the key here. I'm going to break down everything with this game on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Subscribe to that wherever you get your podcast. It's Locked On Celtics here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Sacramento Kings have won 5 of their last 6 games. Somebody help me out here. Is that a good thing? Hi, my name's Matt George, host of the Locked On Kings podcast. Been a while since we've enjoyed this kind of success here in Sacramento, but with tonight's win over the Boston Celtics, we are seeing what many of us already knew here in Sacramento, and that's that De'Aaron Fox is a bona fide star and should be on the Western Conference All-Star team this year when that game is played in Atlanta. Look, over the last 3 fourth quarters, Fox, 17 points, 17 points, 13 points. And once again, he was huge. Also, Tyrese Halliburton, new career high, 21 points tonight. Not a coincidence that he did that on the same day that I had Iowa State head coach Steve Prohm on the Locked On Kings podcast. Maybe there's not a correlation there. Maybe it is just a coincidence, but I'm going to pretend like we had something to do with it. Hey, the Kings are playing really, really good basketball right now. It's a lot of fun. Still a little concerning that when the Kings have their best quarters and really are trying to win games in the fourth quarter, Marvin Bagley is on the bench instead of on the floor. A lot of that is for defensive reasons. A lot of that also has to do with the fact that the Kings winning lineup featuring Fox, Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes at the 4, and Rashawn Holmes at the 5. Who are you going to take out of that lineup? So I understand Luke Walton making that decision, even though I would like to see Bagley getting some of those crunch time minutes. Also, speaking of Harrison Barnes, he's just been so good this season. Another game where he scores over 20 points, and I tweeted out, is tonight's game an audition for the Boston Celtics? We've heard that there's potentially interest in Boston for Harrison Barnes. Now, we don't know if the Kings are going to want to trade Harrison Barnes based off of how he's played this year, but Boston seems to be in need of a player of his caliber. So, hey, maybe it was an audition. We don't know. Overall, Kings get the victory. A lot of reason to be excited right now as a Kings fan. 10-11 on the season. Still a long way to go, but hey, progress is progress. We'll take it.
Ben Golliver, thank you very much. A pleasure as always. We'll talk next week. And by the way, I'll own it. A few weeks ago, I asked, will Luke Walton be the coach next time we do this? I should have asked, will Sacramento be one game away from being 500? Sacramento's in the play-in game right now, I think. They're like 10 and 11. The Rockets lost. They're 10 and 10. They're like a half a game out of a play-in game right now. It's playoff time in Sacramento. I'll just leave the show with him laughing. This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. This exciting collection of truly unique, limited edition diamond engagement rings is available now only at BlueDiamond.com.